You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
And in every case, when I am dealing with something like this, it is important to me to make sure that the children's perspective, the children's voices are represented in my sentencings. And what that means is that for every defendant who comes before me and who suggests, as they often do, that they're just a looker, that these crimes don't really matter, they've collected these things on the internet and it's fine, I tell them about the victim statements that have come in to me as a judge.
March 22nd, 2022, that is Federal Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson opening testimony and statement before Senate Judiciary Committee, speaking about how she treats child porn defendants. Trying to prove I'm not lenient on them is claimed by Missouri Senator Josh Hawley and backed by specific rulings. She chose to talk about defendants who were just downloading, not active in sexually abusing children. There is a difference, but often many lookers become participants, thus not only continuing but escalating the cycle of child porn. And again, I stress, while Judge Jackson was talking about how she treats lookers of child porn, how she treats, sentences those convicted of actually sexually assaulting children, that's also part of her record. And here's the other key to keep in mind. So if you're going to tell me if I download child porn and I get her as a judge in the past, or someone like her, you're going to say, well, you shouldn't have done that. That was bad. That's not good. We're going to lecture you on the harm it has caused previous children, and you should not have done that. So we're not going to punish you severely. We understand you were just looking. Is that kind of like, you're just going to give me permission to do it more? Now, she goes on to say, I put severe restraints on their use of computers. You don't think there are ways to get around that? It's this lenient attitude of these progressive judges that we have to battle. We'll get into this in more detail in the next hour. One other note, though, before we leave this point. There's a lot of report, there are numerous reports, and we know for a fact that so-called dark money has been funding and pushing her to the Supreme Court. They were using dark money to get her elected and nominated to a federal court bench, which the group behind it admitted, yeah, that's what we're doing. And she even admitted, yeah, I know they were out there pushing me. And they continue their push. And one of her biggest supporters has said, the U.S. Constitution is trash. If that's their attitude, and she's reflecting what they want to see on the Supreme Court, you want someone on the court that says or accepts the fact the U.S. Constitution is trash? Now, she did not say that. I want to emphasize it. But those are the folks that are backing her, and she's willing to take their support because she wants to be on the court. Update on Ukraine, good news, bad news, some confusing news. Plus, we're going to focus on the Biden administration, ironically, and without any common sense, no surprise there, asking Russia to help get Iran to reopen talks about nuclear capabilities. Fred Flights with America First Policy Institute will join us. Fred has been watching over the Iran deal for years. You want his intake. And Tristan Justice of the Federalist on how state-controlled media to this day continues to cover up, ignore, falsify information regarding the Hunter Biden laptop story. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they even sent their fact checkers to check the facts again. And, of course, once again, they found no real harm here, no foul. And the CDC, are you listening? Are you listening? The CDC admit it hid data from you during COVID. Why? Well, for your sake, for your safety. What? Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
If you have mold in your home, your family can get very sick. You need to call Wellington Environmental. Realtors, even hospitals and doctors call Wellington to solve mold issues. A Belleville homeowner discovered mold. Good thing he called Wellington. The mold is gone. And Wellington's new chemical process saved him $3,500. A university was facing some major mold issues. They called Wellington. Issues solved. The university saved $40,000. Wellington also helps research and test new products to deal with mold. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. A-rated by the BBB, Missouri and Illinois. Say you heard about Wellington on Larry Connors USA. Save $100 on any mold treatment or $50 on mold sampling. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I've been holding it so long. I've been sleeping all alone. Lord, I miss you. I've been hanging on the phone. I've been sleeping all alone. I won't kiss you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The fierce Ukrainian resistance is turning Vladimir Putin's war into what one NATO official is calling a stalemate. This as the refugee crisis worsens. And Europe prepares to slap even more sanctions on Russia. On the ground, Ukraine's military claiming its troops have regained control of Makariv, and the Ukrainian flag is flying over that city after a Russian retreat.
The Ukrainians are saying that right now they have halted that Russian offensive. They've stopped the Russians from their efforts to encircle the city, and they say that they are launching those counteroffensives. Right now, the Ukrainian forces feel emboldened, and that the Ukrainian forces certainly in the north of Kiev, in the northern parts of the Ukrainian capital, appear to be launching counteroffensives and fighting back.
So the fighting continues, at least 925 civilians documented as killed in the Ukraine war. That's according to the UN. And I say documented because there are many probably still buried under rubble they haven't been able to reach. And that does include civilians killed outside the immediate areas. But now comes this word. Hear this. A senior U.S. defense official saying that Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin will consider the possibility of deploying additional American troops to NATO's eastern flank in Europe. NATO's eastern flank in Europe. They're looking at the Russians are being stalled in Ukraine, but they think we're going to put more troops and boots on the ground, not in Ukraine, I cannot stress that enough, not in Ukraine, but on the eastern flank in Europe. not being specific, if we're talking about Poland, which really would be the eastern flank of Europe, the NATO country most directly involved. And the reasoning, well, the official reason is some of their soldiers, the Russian soldiers, are suffering from frostbite. They lack the appropriate cold weather gear for enforcing or for the environment they're in. So in addition to food and fuel, even in terms of personal equipment, some of the Russians are having trouble. And so he says, we're going to have to start indications and get ready to take back territory the Russians have taken. In other words, we're going to have our forces available as backup, I guess. It's very confusing. We're not going into Ukraine. I can't stress that enough. But we're going to send more troops, U.S. troops, to the eastern flank because the Russian military might be suffering during this cold weather. Do you make sense of that? I can't really make it. We're not going to go in and supply, obviously, warm gear and take care of the Russians fighting Ukrainians, obviously. The Ukrainians may or may not need additional weather gear. We continue to send in equipment. And then the word comes that Putin has put Russian spies who scouted Ukraine under house arrest. He's arrested some of the spies he sent into Ukraine to get intel and information about Ukraine and its ability apparently to fight back, and maybe information on finding Zelensky. He has now apparently placed those same spies he sent in under house arrest, which is suggesting growing distrust, which in turn suggests Putin getting a little paranoid, maybe about some of those around him. There was already a word that had come out previously that Putin had, the phrase was very confusing again, detained, holding back, addressing down, doing more than just complaining to a general, but one of the generals apparently is now either in custody or under house arrest. We're not getting a lot of detail on that. What we are hearing from the Pentagon Secretary, press secretary, is the fight is continuing, and don't like saying it's all stalled out, but the Ukrainian fighters are doing their best.
Calling it a stalemate doesn't seem exactly the best assessment here. I mean, obviously, there are a lot of fighting going on. It's not a static conflict. The Ukrainians are fighting back bravely and valiantly, but here's the thing. They're fighting back in the places and at the times and with the capabilities that are serving their needs best. They're not trying to defend everywhere. They're trying to defend where they know the Russians are trying to take. And so here we are, day 27, Willie, and the Russians really have only taken two city centers in Ukraine, and both of them are in the south. They have not been able to take Kyiv or Kharkiv or Chernihiv. Certainly, Mariupol is very much an active fight right now. The Ukrainians are defending that city as well. So they have been frustrated in achieving any of these objectives, and that's because the Ukrainians are fighting back so hard.
They are fighting back hard, but you have to look at reality. Some towns in Ukraine, reportedly, according to one aid agency, might have 3, maybe 4 days worth of food. And Zelensky, Ukrainian Prime Minister Zelensky, says Mariupol is just, quote, ruins, like Armageddon. And the assaults continue on Mariupol, and precisely because it sits on the Black Sea. And it would create a land bridge direct from Russia through that region of Ukraine right to Crimea, which is something Russia wants. And they want that Black Sea port access directly. We've already been told from U.S. and other NATO officials the Belarusian military could soon join the war in Ukraine. Belarus allowed Putin's forces to gather inside their border, just north of Poland, allowed them to gather and prepare, get their weapons in place, and wait for the go. But apparently, no Belarusian military went with the Russians. Now they're considering they might go. Why? Well, because obviously the Russians are not getting the job done. It's also a word coming out now that there's a large explosion heard in Kyiv. The city is under curfew. We're 8 hours different, so it's about 9:21 in Ukraine, 9:21 at night. And as I continue to look at additional stories that are coming in, there's nothing here that says Putin is making any effort to say, if we get Mariupol, we will stop and back away. And, of course, we know and have acknowledged, again last night, a senior defense official with the U.S. stated, we have seen clear evidence that certainly over the last week or so, Russians have deliberately, intentionally targeted civilian infrastructures, hospitals, and places of shelter. Very clear. And there's talk that Russia is still on the edge, possibly, of using some chemical or biological weapons. All of this, the attack of the civilians and escalating to chemical or biological weapons, would be a war crime. But of course, then you have to get Putin in your hands before you can try him. So Ukraine has recaptured one key suburb of Kyiv at last report. But the Russians are still on the edge. And when I keep referring to Russians, we need to specify something here. Don't think all Russians are active in this, nor even supportive. The rally Putin held recently in an arena that held something like 60,000, you saw it filled to capacity. Russian flags, large and small, being waved as he went on and on and talked basically thuggish remarks as if he were defending his country from an invasion, which is not true. And apparently most of those inside were public service type workers, including teachers. And if you think they went on their own, you're pretty damn naive. We have a meeting coming up, of course, in Brussels. President Biden will be headed into that meeting. And he will also make a visit to Poland. MSNBC made a report on that meeting and what they hope to accomplish.
NATO allies are set to meet this week, likely against the backdrop of a protracted war in Ukraine that will put considerably more Ukrainian civilian lives at risk. And it's a war that the Ukrainian President Zelensky is arguing could have been avoided altogether, saying this weekend that, quote, if we were a NATO member, a war wouldn't have started. And further calling on NATO to give Ukraine some sort of clarity as to whether or not they will ever, ever be able to join the alliance.
That last point is correct, and yet at the same time, maybe dangerous. I've said, and I believe it's clear, that NATO was being kind of coy about we may or we may not bring in Ukraine. When Putin had said, if you bring Ukraine in, if you're thinking about doing it, I will take it back. And then after the invasion, after his troops have gone in and started their devastation, then the NATO UN Council, NATO General stated, there was no imminent decision coming on Ukraine, wasn't even on our schedule. Why the hell didn't you say that earlier? Maybe that would have stopped this. Now we're at a point that if you decide you're going to make Ukraine part of NATO at this moment, that would activate U.S. forces to have to honor Article 5 of the NATO Convention And that would mean we would have to be directly involved. We cannot do that at this point. But Zelensky is right in the sense that either if they had made Ukraine a NATO member years ago, then maybe we wouldn't be here at this point. But at the very least, in recent days when Putin started rattling his sabers and moving troops into place, NATO certainly could have come forward and said, we have no plans to admit NATO anytime soon, and let it go at that. Let Zelensky say, we want to be in NATO, you got to let us know you're going to be in or not, but for now, just make it clear it's not going to happen. In the meantime, the refugees continue to flee, many of them going into Poland and other nearby countries. And an estimated, get this, here's another refugee issue, 14,000 Russians have fled to Turkey since Moscow launched the invasion. 14,000 Russians getting to Turkey. Now, Russian-Ukrainian citizens are not required to have a visit, or rather have a visa to enter Turkey, and they can stay up for 3 months. Russians want out of Russia. They don't like the hardships they're going to face, and they're not in support of this war, many of them. But they don't dare open their mouth about it. Coming up, Senator Ted Cruz issuing his opening statement today as we begin the nomination question process of this Biden Supreme Court nominee. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Law after law after law that they can't get through the democratic process, the Democrats have decided it's much simpler to convince five lawyers in black robes than to try to convince 330 million Americans. That is why Supreme Court confirmation hearings have become so contentious, is because the Supreme Court has arrogated to itself a responsibility the Constitution doesn't give it, which is to make contested policy decisions and take them away from the American people. Now, what should this hearing be and what should it not be? Well, you've heard a number of members on the Republican side of the aisle quite clear on what it should not be. This will not be a political circus. This will not be the kind of character smear that, sadly, our Democratic colleagues have gotten very good at.
That is Senator Ted Cruz, and he's right, exactly on point. The Democrats, if they have their way, they're happy. But if they don't, well, then they start talking about stacking the Supreme Court, and they start looking for folks that will ignore the Constitution. Now, according to some opening remarks of the Biden Supreme Court nominee, Federal Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, I respect this Constitution. Well, she can say that. But she also, by the way, did not answer questions when asked specifically about where do you stand on issues like, oh, I don't know, something like not just the Constitution, but stacking the court. Apparently she didn't really want to get into that answer. And, of course, you heard Senator Cruz of Texas point out, we're not going to do like the Democrats did. We're not going to assault her on a basic charge and accusations against her on her character. We're looking at her rulings. And you're also looking at some of her history. She served on a board, or probably still does until if she gets to the Supreme Court, on the board of a school that promotes critical race theory. Do you think she's going to change her opinion once she becomes a Supreme Court justice on that point? And she's also openly declared that Roe Casey the abortion law is settled law on a right to abortion. Now, keep in mind, she's not going to change the makeup of the court by stepping in to replace Breyer. Still going to be pretty much a 6-3, but the main issue is the light sentences she's given on child porn possessors, distributors, and even sex offenders. And there's some in the Democrat Party, and her exact statement and belief is not clear, but they think that you really should not have the right to publish that a sex offender is in the neighborhood because it violates their constitutional rights. To hell with the kids' rights living in the neighborhood, right? Now, after Justice Breyer announced his retirement, one of the dark money groups Demand Justice claimed credit for getting him off the highest court. Well, he was probably going to do it anyway. But then they went on to say that once she retires, we're going to support this Justice Jackson all the way. And she admitted when she was going for a federal court position, she knew that during her lower court nomination, the group had ad money raised for her and to promote her. She knew that. This same leftist judicial group has strong ties to the Joe Biden White House. No surprise there. In fact, Biden's point persons on judicial nominees worked for Demand Justice. And one of those on the board of Demand Justice, Ellie Mistal, said Jackson has the Supreme Court nomination locked up. And he's also the one who said our U.S. Constitution is trash. Does she buy that statement? Senators get a chance to start throwing questions. We'll find out. Coming up, Biden wants to redo the nuclear deal with Iran. Why? Stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Many car dealers are quick to sell you a car, but Ackerman Toyota knows that's just the beginning of your relationship. When it comes time for routine or special service work, others might be too busy. Not Ackerman Toyota. Hours and days to fit your schedule. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton, just north of Interstate 44. Ackerman Toyota for life.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So as we all recall, during the Obama years, Obama wanted a legacy. And he wanted the legacy to be that I prevented Iran from getting nuclear weapons. And the way he did that was to come together with other nations, including Russia, and work with Iran on a deal that when it was all finished, Obama could say, I did it. I brought everybody together, and Iran will not have a chance of getting any nuclear weapons. Not on my watch. Well, hell, he was in the last year of his term at that point anyway. And the plan itself, the proposal, was so haphazard and ineffective and questionable and actually dangerous to the U.S., Obama could not get it into the U.S. Senate to be treated as a full treaty. So he signed us off, made us part of the agreement based on simply the fact that he was the president and he could do so. A man that has covered a lot of this from the very beginning is Fred Flights, who's now the vice chair of America First Policy Institute. Fred, glad to have you back on board, sir.
Good to be here, Larry.
So let me begin with something very quickly on what I just said about Biden had to do an executive order. It was never a treaty. And there were reports, and I don't think it ever got resolved. Did Iran ever sign off on it anyway?
No, the nuclear deal that Obama's administration negotiated in 2015 was deliberately made an executive agreement so it wouldn't have to be ratified by the Senate. It was ratified by the Iranian parliament, and Obama also did this at the Paris Climate Accord. Obama went around the Constitution, and we can be sure that Biden will do so too.
So did Iran actually sign on the agreement? I know for a period of time it was, oh, yeah, we got what we wanted, but we're not going to bother signing. Did they actually accept the agreement as it was?
They accepted it, but the agreement was not signed by anyone. It
was,
It was submitted for ratification by the Iranian parliament, and my understanding is that the version of the Iranian parliament approved is not actually the same as the one that the U.S. government told Congress about.
All right, so here we are with Biden wanting to redo it. First question, obviously, is why?
Well, I mean, I'm afraid the immediate reason is that Biden wants to undo anything and everything that Donald Trump did. And, you know, this is just, I think it's almost a knee-jerk reaction. But there's also this mistaken belief among liberal commentators that we can either live with a nuclear Iran or, you know, we'll slow down Iran's nuclear program a little bit and that will stop it. And there's also others who think that it's unfair that Israel has nuclear weapons and Iran does not. They think nuclear weapons are stabilizing because, for example, India and Pakistan have nuclear weapons. I don't even know if Biden understands those rationales. There's theorists behind this deal that have argued this. I think Biden probably just wants to get back into it because Trump got out of it. But these are all bad reasons, and they're all going to help Iran get a nuclear weapon.
Well, recently, former Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel said it would be disastrous, not only for Israel and the Middle East, but the world, as he points out, not only are they would be working on nuclear weapons, but ballistic missiles to deliver them right in the heartland of the U.S.
The deal doesn't mention Iran's ballistic missile program, and Iran can currently hit at least Eastern Europe with ballistic missiles, but it's testing rockets it calls space launch vehicles that are really tests of ICBMs. And the purpose of these ICBMs is to carry nuclear warheads at least all over Europe, and someday they'll be able to hit the United States.
And then we have the Biden administration that has basically called Putin a thug, a terrorist, and the slaughter that's taking place of innocent civilians, a war criminal. And yet the Biden administration had been reaching out to Putin and Russia to help get Iran back to the negotiating table because Iran won't talk direct to us.
You know, this was a really serious error by Biden. It's okay for you and me to call Putin a thug and a war criminal, and of course I think you'd agree that he is. But the President of the United States can't do that since he has to conduct diplomatic relations with Russia. We still have an embassy with Russia, at least as of today. The Russians have threatened to break diplomatic relations over this insult. That's not the way statesmen talk. And Biden just keeps talking. It's almost like he doesn't have any, well, I mean, I don't think he has any sense. He doesn't understand the implications of doing that. Putin may have to remain in power because we can't remove him. What does that mean with our future relations with this country if the President of the United States has called him a war criminal? It was really a disastrous mistake that's going to make it even harder to resolve the Ukraine crisis.
Well, for balance here, Trump has been guilty of similar type statements in the past while not as president, but since has made it very clear where he stands, and I don't know if he's actually used that phrase, but Trump has also made several things that many said, that's not diplomatic speech, that's over the line.
Well, look, whether Trump made diplomatic gaffes or not, we know Biden made some. And look, I think President Trump has misspoken from time to time. We might agree on that. But in the here and now, while they're trying to get a negotiated settlement between Ukraine and Russia, and I don't know whether the Russians are going to negotiate in good faith, but when the President of the United States calls a Russian president a war criminal, that makes it harder to negotiate a peace treaty.
So let me ask this, and I don't know how this might also then play into going back to the Iran nuclear deal and Russia assisting us, because they were part of the original, quote, deal, right?
Yes.
Okay. So while we're asking them to help intercede to get Iran back to the table, while we're not only calling them a war criminal, but we're looking at the people of Ukraine valiantly fighting against them in the invasion, if Russia decides at the Mariupol, if by any chance Putin decides, okay, we've got our land bridge into Crimea and the Black Sea, and we've got really what we want, could give a damn about the rest of the country, although I know he cares because it's rich with various resources, and then he wants to kind of go back to things as they were before, how difficult would that be?
Well, you know, a lot of us are thinking in Washington, if there's a peace agreement, what could Ukraine agree to? And I think they're going to offer neutrality and not to enter NATO. And concerning the territories of Crimea, Donetsk, and Donbass, these are the three disputed territories before the conflict, maybe that could be resolved later. The problem is what you just mentioned. All this territory Russia has conquered since the conflict began, which Ukraine is not going to want to concede. And I think that's going to be an enormous sticking point, because you know through history usually when a peace treaty occurs, the new borders are where your armies ended up.
Right.
Very rarely do the armies withdraw. Now, with the exception of the United States, we take territory in war and then we pull out. But
yeah, we only use territory at other countries to bury our dead.
Well, unfortunately, that's right, but it will be very difficult to get Russia to pull out of territory that it fought for in Ukraine.
Well, my other point, though, is that how are we ever going to have, quote, natural, as before, relations and trade with Russia going forward?
Well, it's going to be really difficult, but look, Russia has the largest nuclear arsenal on Earth, and finding some way, some constructive way to work with Russia, you know, we're going to have to figure that out somehow, and it's going to be really hard. Now, there are people on MSNBC saying we shouldn't drop sanctions until Putin's turned over for a war crimes trial. That's not going to happen, and it's going to be really painful, but we're going to have to find a way to engage the Russians, and the price for that may be they have to pull completely out of Ukraine, and we're going to have to drop sanctions, and that's going to be, people are going to be mad, especially in Ukraine.
In the last 30 seconds, folks, you're listening to Fred Flights with the America First Policy Institute. I caught you on Fox News the other day talking about the Russia-Ukraine and where things stood, and, of course, it's been several days. At this point, would you say it's a stalemate still, or that Russia is still viable?
Well, first I want to say that I turned down Fox to do your show. I want your viewers to know how much I value you to invite me on this afternoon.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
I think it is a stalemate, but I also think that the conflict is coming to what might be called a culminating point, in which the Russian forces are reaching the maximum achievements that they can get, and it's then going to be just attrition and a stalemate. And I think with the enormous Russian military losses and the effect on the economy, Putin's going to have to come around negotiating. I just hope it's sooner rather than later.
All right. Fred Flights, Vice Chair, America First Policy Institute. Always thank you for your time. And, Fred, I'll let you go back to Fox News now.
Good to be here. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you. Fred Flights. Coming up, the CDC admitting it hid data from you for your own good. You got to hear this story. Coming up. If you want to impress someone, I personally recommend Cafe Napoli, Clayton, our town and country, or St. Charles. Cafe Napoli offers private rooms for up to 50 guests, so plan a corporate party, an anniversary party, a birthday party, a party party. Cafe Napoli has a location near you, Clayton, town and country, and St. Charles, where Cafe Napoli 3 is now serving lunch or Sunday brunch, only at Cafe Napoli 3 in St. Charles.
This
is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, so I don't know how you're going to take this story other than you're going to say, oh, that can't be right. You got to be wrong, Larry. Well, let me read a recent headline from the New York Times. I know they often are wrong and give false information or ignore information such as the Hunter laptop scandal until the other day, and suddenly they admit, yeah, it's all real. But not during and going into the election, they wouldn't do it. I've got a guest coming up, by the way, in the second hour, a correspondent for the Daily Signal and the Federalist, who wrote a piece on how the state-controlled media continues to cover up, hide, and basically rewrite the story about the Hunter laptop. You don't want to miss that. That's in the second hour. But the New York Times did recently admit, yes, the story's true. So when I tell you this headline, put it in the context of that finally they admitted the Hunter laptop story was real, as originally reported by the New York Post, which the Times considers, we're the old great lady. We've been around news for a while. The New York Post, that's just, even though it's been around longer, it's basically a tabloid in the view of the New York Times. Well, here's the headline. The CDC isn't publishing large portions of the COVID data it collects. Now, David Gortler was taking a look at this. He's a pharmacologist, pharmacist, FDA, and health policy fellow. So he knows what he's speaking. And he said, even though the headline reads, the CDC isn't publishing large portions of the COVID data it collects, he says the headline downplays what the article in fact reveals. 2 years into the pandemic, the agency leading the country's response to the public health emergency has published only a tiny fraction of the data it's collected, several people familiar with the data said. Yeah, that's such stupid journalistic writing as you would expect from paper reporters. Comma, somebody said. Not conversational speech whatsoever. Anyway, I'm off on a tangent. I had taught decades young students coming in the business and say, don't write it that way. Write it the way you'd speak. All right, I know. I get off my teaching. Anyway, going back to the article, it says when the Centers for Disease Control, quote, published the first significant data on the effectiveness of boosters in adults younger than 65, it left out numbers for a huge portion of that population, 18 to 49. The group least likely to benefit from extra shots. And the agency has been reluctant to make those figures public, according to the New York Times. Why? Well, because they might be misinterpreted as the vaccines being ineffective. You think? And after several inquiries from the New York Times, the CDC unexpectedly decided to publish its data on the risk of hospitalization and death from both unvaccinated and vaccinated Americans with or without booster dosing. But again, it did it in such a way that it made everything look very low. And according to David Gortler, writing this article, again, a pharmacologist, a pharmacist, and looking at what the New York Times printed, he said this rationale of the CDC for hiding, deliberately hiding, government collected effectiveness data. Actually, I think this is the New York Times making this statement. The rationale for deliberately hiding government collected effectiveness data was even confirmed by the CDC spokeswoman. This taxpayer-funded agency did not want to give you, the taxpayers, the one under coronavirus restrictions and draconian lockdowns. They did not want to give you the full picture of vaccine effectiveness. Why? It reads they did not want to give taxpayers the full picture of vaccine effectiveness for their own good. And by there, they're referring to you. In other words, they think it would be bad for you to really understand the facts. So let's just don't put all the facts out there. The official narrative put forward most clearly by President Biden, if you're out there unvaccinated, you don't have to die. Get the vaccine. And, of course, we had the mass vaccine mandates, mask mandates, continued lockdowns. But then the truth came out. Boosters had proven so ineffective, they're rarely mentioned anymore, even among the most zealous. And many who have had the boosters, and I'm adding this aside, are seeing some strange and weird reactions and issues that they didn't have before. At least I am, when it comes to certain muscles. But I've heard that from others as well. But what it gets down to is, again, if these officials were despicable enough to omit this data, what else do Americans still not know, quote, for their own good? Damn frightening, isn't it? Coming up, a closer look at Biden's nominee appearing before the U.S. Senate. Stand by, please.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.